It's Alan Chartok. I'm here in the Congressional Corner with Brad Hayes. Now, Brad Hayes is Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College. He holds a PhD in government and politics from the University of Maryland. And I have to say, Brad, you are one of the brightest guys that I know. And so you'll have to answer a couple of questions. You ready?
Yeah, although I think you should meet more people.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So what happened? What happened?
So, as we know now, right, the kind of conventional narrative on the election is that a coalition emerged that we expected to favor Trump, but that favored him in higher numbers than what many expected, right? So that the coalition of kind of white, working class, rural, less educated, Native and nativists kind of came out in droves and did so in a way that, you know, propelled Trump by flipping a series of states mostly associated kind of with the Rust Belt. And one of the things that was, you know, interesting, there are several kind of missteps by most of us that were kind of tracking the election. One of those missteps is kind of the puzzle, and that's that this group doesn't typically turn out at the levels that they did. And so you would expect, okay, well, how do you turn out this group? You can look at it in terms of, okay, well, does a candidate have a lot of money to spend that might help with greater mobilization? And on those kinds of things, Trump had less money. He had absolutely no ground game. The Republican National Party had said that they weren't going to dedicate much resources to turning people out for Trump. And so in that sense, there is this really kind of interesting moment where we probably can't understand this election through the conventional lens of a political campaign. But as a colleague of mine at Union College reminds me, that we probably should look at this through the lens of a movement campaign. And if we're thinking about this in terms of a movement campaign, then, you know, Trump was able to kind of offset certain kind of disadvantages that he had in terms of money, in terms of ground game, through kind of media attention and, you know, a heightened presence on social media. And in thinking about it this way, too, here's where kind of a lack of substance likely helped him. If we think about many movements that are successful, they have a broad, not terribly specified objective. And, you know, in Trump's case, right, that we, you know, saw this kind of thinness in his policy positions, that actually may have aided him because it allowed for many different people to kind of latch on to Trump as a change agent and the kind of change that they desired, that they could in some ways kind of project their desires for the country onto. And the other thing I think, you know, too, is, you know, thinking about kind of the projection of one's desires onto Trump. You know, simply put, Trump did extremely well in talking to, you know, his particular coalition, right? This group that had been left behind economically by the globalization, an economically vulnerable group, and communities, particularly rural communities that are facing new and rather dark challenges such as opioid addiction, a rise in violent crime. And, you know, if you flip this back around then to the Clinton campaign, you know, Clinton didn't really successfully speak to this particular group. And that certainly appears to have hurt her.
What did she do? She wanted to put together a coalition of black, brown, poor people who would vote for her, right? I mean, as opposed to, you know, white, lower middle class folks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this group that used to be central to the Democratic coalition, right, is now seemingly lost, at least for an election, is lost to the Democratic Party and seems quite hostile to the Democratic Party. And that's a change. That means that there is some component of the economic justice narrative that Democrats lost that they probably need to regain and regain quickly in order to be more competitive with this group. You don't necessarily have to win this group, of course, but you have to perform much better than what the Democrats were able to do.
Now, Brad Hayes, if everybody in the proposed Hillary group came out and voted in this election, she would have won, wouldn't you?
Yes. And of course, we want to think a little bit about what winning means, right? I mean, there's the winning in the Electoral College, the most important thing. But
I want to talk
of course,
to you about that.
You know, yeah. Of course, you know, the popular vote did go her way. There are a couple things going on here, right? We haven't had enough time to fully examine, you know, what happened and why it happened. But when we're thinking about the Democratic coalition and the winning coalition, it has not been successful more recently, unless Obama's name is at the head of the ticket, right? So that that coalition did very well in 2008. It does very well in 2012, but it does terribly in the midterm elections, and it wasn't there for Clinton. So
is that because Obama was black?
No, not just one reason. There are multiple reasons. But, I mean, I think if you're looking at African-American turnout in this particular election, then you might say that there is something about identity politics that are important here. I mean, but to go beyond that, I mean, I think this is something that I'm kind of interested in. I'm not, let me be clear, I am not suggesting that we can explain the outcome in 2016 based on this. But this is the first election where we have really seen the kind of the new restrictions on voting rights in several critical states, in places like Arizona, Georgia, New Hampshire, Ohio, Virginia, and Wisconsin. And some of those names might, in fact, stand out to you in the ways in which we thought the polling was tracking one way, and then it turned out to be another. Now, the effects on overall turnout in some of those states is mixed, right? Wisconsin was down. Arizona, I believe, was down a little bit. But Georgia and Virginia were up slightly. But it doesn't tell us necessarily about everybody who is voting and the demographics therein. So we're going to have to spend more time analyzing this. But nationwide, the overall percentage of eligible voters casting votes was down.
Yes, but down so that the usual, about half the eligible voters didn't vote.
That's very true. But, you know, thinking about who has turned out and who didn't turn out, to the point that, you know, kind of bring this back, you know, African Americans in Michigan, for example, way down. We saw in places like Detroit and in Flint, down 10%. And so those numbers are disconcerting if you're a Democrat. And, you know, again, we don't want to just put it in the frame of Obama, because there's a lot going on. There's the relationship between African-Americans and the state that's been brought to the fore through Black Lives Matter. If you think about Flint, Michigan, right, the relationship with the state there is terrible, and it should be terrible because of what was done to the residents of Flint and their drinking water. So all of those things as a package, I think, are really important to understand and thinking about, you know, how durable is this shift that we saw? Is this a one-off, or are we seeing, you know, the rise of a new coalition that can carry Republicans for a while?
Well, this has been the Congressional Corner for the day with Brad Hayes. He'll be back. Brad, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about something I'm getting a tremendous amount of mail on, the Electoral College.
Great.